Hey everyone, this is Jordan from sleeklens.com and welcome to a new podcast. And this one's going to be again, just kind of like I did a couple weeks ago. This one's going to be all about your photography questions. So these are questions that have been submitted in, just emailed or asked on the Facebook page. These ones have in particularly been submitted to me directly through email. If you have your photography questions and you want them answered, make sure you just email your questions to jordan@sleeklens.com, and I'll make sure to put your questions in the next episode of the podcast where we do a Q&A session. So in this episode, I'm going to cover five of the questions here, so five questions that have come in. So let's go ahead and start with the first one. The first one is from Jeffrey Tomlin, and his question is, what is the difference between DSLRs and mirrorless cameras? So there are a lot of differences as far as, you know, how they're built and the types of features that you can have in there, but I'm only going to talk about some of the bigger differences, the main differences that would actually be beneficial to a lot of people. And the first one is, number one, it's quieter. And the reason why it's a more quieter camera, especially when you're taking photos, is because it does not have a mirror, in particular a mirrorless camera. That's why it's called that. It does not have a mirror. So In most DSLRs, or all DSLRs, there is a mirror that kind of flips up and flips down. And that mirror is there to kind of, without all getting super technical, it's there to see through the viewfinder. It allows you to see through the lens. So when you look through the viewfinder, you're actually looking at a mirror that's in the top of the viewfinder, and then it bounces off of a reflex mirror, and then you can look through the lens. So that's basically what it is. It's that mirror that is going to be gone when you have a mirrorless camera. And so the reason why it's quieter is because when you take a picture with a DSLR, that mirror flips up, exposes the scene to the sensor, and then flips back down. And so in essence, when you take a photo with a mirrorless camera, you're just eliminating that. You're basically just seeing what the shutter, what the sensor sees. And it does not use that mirror. So when you take a photo with a mirrorless camera, you're just going to almost hear nothing in a way. You can probably hear some sort of sound, but with a DSLR, you're hearing that that shutter or that mirror go flip up and flip down. That's what that click is when you take a photo. So that's one difference, one main difference that a lot of people get into when they talk about mirrorless cameras. But another difference, and probably one of the biggest ones, is actually size. A mirrorless camera is, I don't know the exact measurements on most of them because they all vary, but just for a roundabout number, with the lens and everything, lenses that you can attach to them, it's almost probably a little bit over half the size that a regular DSLR is. It probably weighs a lot less as well. So depending on what kind of version you get, a lot of mirrorless cameras are very, very compact. They make it very, very easy to travel with. And the lenses are typically a little bit shorter, especially if you get like a telephoto lens. They kind of, they're a little bit shorter. They don't have a much more extended distance with them. So, I mean, you can still zoom in to a specific length, and they have lenses around mirrorless cameras. But for the most part, they're very, very, very portable, and that's a very, very beneficial thing when it comes to mirrorless cameras. So those are the main differences of them. Most people go for the size thing just because, you know, if you want a backup camera, a mirrorless camera is probably a really good backup camera to have because it's small, compact, and especially if you have the brand that your main camera has, you can probably do a little bit of interchangeable lenses and stuff like that. So that's the main difference. So thank you, Jeffrey, for your question. All right, so the next question is going to be from a Michael Sistic, I believe that's how you say it. He asked, how do you shoot and put together a time lapse? There's a lot of different ways to do a time lapse. A lot of people choose to do a traditional time lapse, which is like an individual photo. You take a photo every 2, 3, 5 seconds, something like that, and then you put all those images together in a movie format. Here nowadays, a lot of people actually just kind of shortcut that and just do one long recording of something. Just take your DSLR and put it on a tripod, turn it on movie mode, and just record that and speed it up. But if you're going for the traditional route of taking photos and putting them together, Basically, what you're doing is you want your camera to take a photo again every so often. So a normal time lapse would maybe be 5 seconds or something like that. So every 5 seconds, it's going to take a photo. And then what you would do to put it together is you take all of those photos. You probably don't want to shoot raw. You probably want to try to shoot JPEG. Just to make it easier on yourself and make it a little bit less where it takes up a lot of space. So JPEGs will work pretty good for this time lapse, but you take those and you put them together in some sort of compiler that will take them and put them together into a movie format. There's a lot of different apps that you can do this. Unfortunately, Lightroom doesn't do this. There is an extension that you can get. I believe there's a free extension that you can get for Lightroom, but I haven't found it to be the best as far as putting images together to make a time lapse. But there's a lot of different apps that you can look at, and one of the apps that I particularly use, and I'm a Mac person, an Apple person, so I can only speak to the Apple version of this, but it's called Interval. And what you basically do is just import all your JPEGs. It knows which ones were taken based on the file name, the count of them. And you can make some adjustments as far as basic stuff like exposure, some saturation, stuff like that. And then you just hit export, and it will go ahead and put all those together into a movie file, and then there you go. You have your time lapse. Windows users, there's a lot of other apps that you can find that way, but I can only speak to the ones that I've actually used, and Interval is probably the best one that I have found. You can find that one in the Mac App Store, so if you want to check that out, again, it's called Interval. All right, so the next question is from Matt Harrison, and Matt says, how do you remove some extreme distortion from your shots in either Photoshop or Lightroom? Okay, when you're talking about extreme distortion, there's probably not a lot you can do, especially if it's very extreme, and I'm just guessing on how extreme it is. If it's very bad, you're probably going to lose a lot of your image. So basically, you're turning a wide-angle shot that you might have with extreme distortion into a normal shot, and you're losing a lot of the scene. But there's a couple ways that you can do this. You can actually do this with in Photoshop. You can actually use the adaptive wide angle filter. That's a filter that's built into Photoshop, and what it allows you to do is kind of follow the contour of your photo. So you basically draw from one point to another, and you tell that point it's supposed to be straight. And then it'll warp your photo and straighten that point up. And then the more lines you draw, the straighter your image becomes, and the more distortion is removed. So that's a good filter to use in Photoshop. Another thing that you can do in Photoshop a little bit more manually is to actually draw out ruler guides that's on your photo. So if you hit the Command R key, I believe that's what it is on Command or Control R, that brings up the rulers in Photoshop. What that'll do is it'll allow you to draw out a straight line, a perfectly straight ruler, and then you can just bring your image into the free transform mode, choose distortion, and then you can start, you know, warping your image yourself to align up with those rulers. So the more rulers you draw, again, the straighter your image will be, and you can line it up a little bit better. As far as Lightroom, there's not a whole lot of tools that you can remove extreme distortion with. You can try the transform, the develop module there, and that will, you can choose auto and see what that will do. If that doesn't work, then you're kind of left with the main option, which is to use the guided transform. The guided transform makes you draw out a maximum of four lines that are supposed to be straight, and it will start doing basically the same thing that the adaptive wide angle does. And it does a good job as well, but depending on how extreme it is, you're probably going to lose a lot of your image. So those are the best ways to remove distortion. The one, if you're only using Lightroom, that's you're really limited to auto transform and guided transform. But if you bring it into Photoshop, you might have a little bit more luck. So thanks, Matt, for that question. All right. So the next question is from Dennis Brown. And Dennis says, how do you develop your own style as a photographer? So this question is not a right or wrong question. This is not a a factual question. But a lot of people think developing your own style is developing the types of photos that you actually shoot. And that can be a way of developing your style, but developing your style can be way more than that. It can be the way you process your files. It can be the type of mood that you shoot, the type of genre that you shoot. Specifically, if you let's say you do portraits, and let's say you do a lot of very moody portraits with extreme lighting, and that's just kind of what you typically like to do. That can be your style. A lot of people think that when you do when you have a particular style, that's really all you should shoot. One of the tips that I always give people when it comes to building a portfolio is, if you're trying to, let's say you're trying to get into portraits, you don't want to have your website full of portraits and then all of a sudden you throw in a gallery of pet photography or food photography or something like that. You want your portfolio, if you're going to be a specific type of photographer, you want to just showcase those. Much like if you have an Instagram account and you want to showcase your photos on Instagram, you don't want to throw in, your portrait photos in there and then all of a sudden throw in what you had for dinner that night or something like that. Kind of keeping your style on your website, is displaying your style, is very important. You want to make sure that your style is showcased to the fullest extent that it can be. But, you want to make sure that, if you're photographing certain things, there's a lot of certain things, a lot of different ways people edit files. And if you bring photos in the Lightroom and you typically do a certain type of thing to your photo, you're probably starting to develop your own type of style, your own type of method. And eventually, when you start doing that kind of thing, you're going to notice that maybe your photos start to stand out a little bit more from others. And that can be a good thing or a bad thing. You can look at other files and say, man, I wish my files would look like that. But you've already started to develop your style. It's still great to learn, obviously. But, when you're developing your style, you want to keep learning, but stay true to what you really like. You don't want to start editing for other people, saying, if some people look at your photos and say, oh, that's a little bit too saturated. You don't want to start desaturating your photos just because some people say that that's a little too saturated. That is the way you like to edit your files. So there's really, when it comes to photography or pretty much anything in the creative field, there's not really a true right or wrong. That's if there was a true right or wrong, this wouldn't be a creative field. It would just be another type of, factual thing. But we're all creatives. We all like to do our own thing. We all see things a different way. So know when to develop your style, know when to learn the rules, and know when to break them. And that's, I think, is a really good thing. So thank you, Dennis, for that question. I always like to get questions like that. All right, and the last question is from a Douglas Daniels. And his question says, what is the best way to organize your Lightroom catalog? So I don't know if this is the best way, but this is the way that I have personally found that it makes it very, very easy to find my files. And it makes it very, very easy to just know that my catalog is organized. So what I typically do is at the beginning of every year, I create a new folder and I title it of that year. So this is 2018, so I will make a photo I'll make a folder and I'll title it 2018. And let's say the next day I'll run out and take some photos in a nearby city. So I will go into that 2018 folder and I'll create a folder called Cityscapes. And then in that folder, I'll call it the name of the city, and I'll put all of my photos in there. So that's the photos I took of that particular city. Then the next day after that, let's say I took some photos of some portraits of some friends. So within that 2018 folder, I'll create another folder that says portraits, and then I'll label it, whatever shoot it was for Becky and John or something like that. And I'll label it there, and then I'll put the photos in that. I'm not going to put everything in the 2018 folder. I'm going to always create the specific folder within the genre. So, you know how I'm not doing 2018 and then putting Becky and John in 2018. I'm putting Becky and John in the portraits folder. So I always create a genre for that particular range of photos. If I go to the beach, I'll do seascapes. If I do regular landscapes, I'll do landscapes. And so on and so forth. I'll just keep creating a hierarchy of those particular files in their specific folder as far as genre goes. One thing I also do, which I don't do enough of, which, you know, it can be kind of, kind of time consuming, is keywording your images. So when you import your images, if you do a specific shoot, again, like portraits or something like that, always keyword them with the style of what it is. So you can keyword it with the names of the people, that it's a portrait shoot, where it was, that kind of thing. It can be time consuming, but you know, it's going to be very, very easy to actually search your catalog if you start creating a huge, huge, huge catalog. It's going to be very easy to pull back your images if you keyword them and you keep them in a very nice, organized folder structure. So again, Doug, I'm not sure if that is the best way to do it, but that's the way that I found, and it's very, very easy to find my files. So especially if you want to look back at the end of the year and find the really good files that you have, you're going to know that, oh, I really like this shoot. I can go back there and look at that specific folder, and all of my photos are going to be in that specific folder. So that is the way I do it. So thank you, Doug, for that question. All right, guys, so those are the five questions from you, the listeners. If you have your own photography question that you want answered on the Sleek Lens podcast, make sure you to email it to jordan@sleeklens.com, and I'll make sure to put it in the next Q&A episode. And also remember to rate and review the podcast. At the end of this month, we're going to go ahead and give a nice little gift away to one of the listeners that rates and reviews the podcast, and you got to make sure you actually type out a review, because if you just leave a star rating, not going to be able to pull your name up. So make sure you actually write a little review about the podcast. That'll be great for you guys. And I'll make sure to hand out something really cool for everybody. So thank you guys for enjoying the podcast. Thank you for rating it and spreading the word. And this has been Jordan from Sleek Lens, and I'll see you in the next week.